Aloha. Welcome to Makai Watch, a program about the aina, defined as that which feeds us. This program focuses on information and opportunities for community involvement in the stewardship of our resources on Kauai, Makai, toward the ocean, as all things flow to the sea and the sea is connected to you and me. If you're interested in volunteering for the Hanalei Makai Watch program, please contact us at 826-1985. The Hanalei Makai Watch program publishes the Hanalei Moon and Tide calendar, now in its fourth printing. We hope you are enjoying your copy of the 2015 calendar. If you have comments about the content of our calendar or ideas, please let us know. My name is Maka'ala. I would like to thank KKCR for providing this program and Laura Christine for engineering it for us. We will be happy to take your calls after we've introduced our subject for today. You can call us at 826-7771. We're going to be running our regular contest today, so listen for the question and win a prize. If you have ideas for future shows, please let us know. Today is World Oceans Day, Makai, toward the sea. What does this mean for you and me? It's a good day to remember to stand on sand. The corals and live rocks are under many stresses, and adding the pressure of your feet may be more than they can take. I have some information and ideas that I want to share today, and if you have some, please give us a call at 826-7771 and share. First, a few ocean facts. Covering approximately 59 million square miles and containing more than half of the free water on Earth, the Pacific is by far the largest of the world's ocean basins. Do you know how it got its name? In 1519, Portuguese navigator Ferdinand Magellan, in the employ of Spain, began a journey across the Atlantic Ocean to seek a western route to the Spice Islands via South America. After braving perilous seas and navigating through what we now know as the Straits of Magellan, his small fleet entered an unfamiliar ocean in November of 1520. He called this body of water Pacific due to the calmness of the water at the time, Pacific meaning peaceful. When Magellan and his crew entered the Pacific Ocean after their long journey, they thought that the Spice Islands were close at hand. Little did they know that their destination remained thousands of miles away. The explorers had ventured into the largest ocean on Earth. Second question, why is the ocean salty? I get asked this periodically. Salt in the ocean comes from rocks on land. The rain that falls on the land contains some dissolved carbon dioxide from the surrounding air. This causes the rainwater to be slightly acidic due to carbonic acid, which forms from carbon dioxide and water. Recognize the syndrome there, the CO2, the acidity, the acid rain. As the rain erodes the rock, acids in the rainwater break down the rock. This process creates ions or electrically charged atomic particles. These ions are carried away and run off to streams and rivers and ultimately to the ocean. Many of the dissolved ions are used by organisms in the ocean and are removed from the water. Others are not used up and are left for long periods of time where their concentrations increase over time. Two of the more prevalent ions in seawater are chloride and sodium. Together, they make up over 90% of all dissolved ions in the ocean. Sodium and chloride are salty. And one more. Why is the ocean blue? The ocean is blue because water absorbs colors in the red part of the light spectrum. Like a filter, this leaves behind colors in the blue part of the light spectrum for us to see. The ocean may also take on green, red, or other hues as light bounces off of floating sediments and particles in the water. Most of the ocean, however, is completely dark. Hardly any light penetrates deeper than 656 feet, and no light penetrates deeper than 3,280 feet. Recognize that number? That would be a mile down. So when the river runs chocolate and the bay runs brown, it's a reflection of those particles that are suspended in the water and not a reflection of anything above it. So that was fun. You might want to remember some of that for the question of the day. Now, a few updates on ocean-related things for us here on the north shore of Kauai. The Hanalei Bay Coral Study continues. Doctors Alan Friedlander and Eric Brown spent Memorial Day weekend reinstalling the larval settlement plates at 21 sites around Hanalei Bay. As the corals spawn this month, some will attach themselves to these ceramic plates. In the fall, Alan and Eric will return, remove the plates, and take them to the lab for processing. A count will be made of the number of larvae that have attached, and this provides a recruitment value for the bay's coral. This work is the longest-running project of its kind in Hawaii and has played an important role in our understanding of the marine conditions and coral health in Hanalei. We thank Alan and Eric and look forward to the 2015 report. For information on this project and previous data, please go to the Hanalei Watershed HUI.org website. We keep the previous reports of their work. It's important to know that the platelet installation sites are permanent sites. They don't reinstall them every year. The pins stay there. They're stainless steel. They don't impact anything. And they install, Eric and Alan install a rebar and PVC stand on top of those pins that contain ceramic plates. There's pictures of them actually on the Hanalei Watershed Hui website. It's an interesting process. The baby corals attach to the ceramic plates, and then at the end of the project each year, they wash the plates and treat them and then literally count the little ones that have attached. Previous reports show that it's a good indicator of water quality. It's a good indicator of the coral recruitment, how many babies are actually returning to Hanalei Bay. As you probably could guess, most of the high numbers for coral recruitment, meaning more of the baby corals, stick to the plates in places that are not directly in front of a river mouth. They're out in the further distances of the bay. But these settlement plates are installed 21 locations all around the bay. And it gives us a good indication of how things are improving or worsening in the quality of the reef life of Hanalei. It's a 20-year study. Again, it's the longest in the state. We're very, very proud of this work. And we thank Alan and Eric for doing this work. It's of note that they do this on their own dime. Some of you may have seen the Makai Watch boat in the bay over Memorial Day weekend, and now you know what they were doing. The last day was rough water, and they had to work very hard to get the plates installed. They do it again on their own dime. They're not paid. The Makai Watch boat and trailer were donated to the Hanalei Watershed Hui. The motor was purchased by a donor. Maintenance of equipment is funded by individuals, and the fuel and dive tanks and air are paid for by Alan and Eric. If you're interested in supporting this work, please let us know. For those of you that have lived here for a while, you might remember Alan Friedlander, who was doing some work in Hanalei Bay in 1992, just before Iniki struck. And he was doing what's called a creel survey, K-R-E-E-L. It's the name of the basket into which you put your fish on the continent. And he was asking fishermen what they had caught and how much they had caught. And I enjoy this story because he was walking up to fishermen and saying, you know, what did you catch? And they didn't want to tell him. And he said, let me see in your cooler. And they didn't want to show him. And so he drove up the hill to Princeville, where the St. Regis is now, and used binoculars to look over the cliff down into the bay, would see a fisherman catch something, and then go driving quick back down and out to the fisherman and say, I saw you catch something, please tell me what it was. And after the first few, he made friends, and they were much more willing to share. He had to be assertive to start with, no doubt. But that data needs to be repeated, and that's one of the projects that we hope we get funding for in the next couple of years, to repeat that creel survey, to know exactly what the catch is. There's no negative, there's no downside, it's just good information. But we certainly thank Alan and Eric, Eric is a coral specialist well known throughout the Pacific region, and he works out of Kalaupapa. He works for the National Park Service. And Eric works for the University of Hawaii and National Geographic. Okay, second update, something that near to dear to many of our hearts, is the coral disease issue on Kauai and throughout Hawaii. But for the purposes of today's conversation, it'll be related to the North Shore. The work to better understand the coral disease outbreak on Kauai and elsewhere in Hawaii is being coordinated and overseen by the Department of Land and Natural Resources, the Division of Aquatic Resources, University of Hawaii, and other partners. Christina Runyon, a PhD student at UH Manoa, I hope is on the line, to provide us with an update of the disease research. She works out of the Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology and at UH Manoa. Christina, are you there?
Hello.
There you are.
How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Thanks for calling in, Christina. This is a good clear line. I hope you stand still wherever you are.
Yes.
Okay, so you heard, I think you heard me just introduce the idea and of the coral disease project, and you have been spearheading a couple of things, some of the research itself, but also a couple of the informational websites. So I think I'm just going to let you talk for a minute about where we are with what we call the black band disease. Is it still around?
Yes, actually it is still around, and just to refresh people's memory, that black band is a cyanobacterial disease. It's also made up of a consortium of a few other bacteria as well that end up causing tissue loss across coral colonies. Right now we've seen it on Montiprid colonies, and we've predominantly seen it on the north and east facing shores. Now, we do still see black band out there. The numbers are not quite as high as the initial outbreak, but the disease is still on the reefs. We are also still coming out seasonally, where we come out and we do surveys looking for black band disease and other disease across 20 sites that we established about 2 years ago. And then we've just implemented some water quality testing that we're doing. But what we're really excited about is that we are taking on partnership with other agencies. USGS is putting together a project looking at the groundwater discharge in the areas where we've seen black band and done surveys at. And then, plus, we also have Surfrider, who's been gracious enough to allow us to use their equipment, so now we can better test water quality on a monthly basis across our 20 sites, just to get a better picture of what might be some of the drivers behind this disease that we're seeing. But black band is still out there the summer months, and when the water gets a little bit warmer, we'll be back out, and we know that we'll more than likely see a little bit higher levels of black band than what we saw just this springtime.
It's just not as prevalent in the cooler water, is that it?
Yeah, there's probably a few factors that are associated with the disease sort of just not being very present. During the cooler months, it could be it's dormant. It could be there's a number of things that could cause the disease to sort of just die back a bit. But out of the tag colonies that I had before, there was a small resurgence over time where the disease would go away and it would come back on the colonies that I was watching. So it does. But even in the cooler months, I have seen it. I have seen it full blown on a few colonies out there. Not even as many colonies as what I've seen during the warmer months. But we are looking at warm water again this summer, close to as warm as it was last year in October. So early fall, water temperatures probably still will be warm enough for black band to be present on the reef, and we're going to continue monitoring it, following it. And we're trying to associate some of these environmental factors to the prevalence or at each site, because each site is very different. But with USGS, Surfrider on board helping us look at this, we might be able to get a better picture of what might help water quality, what might be some of the factors associated with the reoccurrence of the disease.
That'll be very interesting. We have a lot of water quality data, some of it ongoing on the North Shore, but I know there's many locations on the island that don't. So that's a very worthy effort to try and make that correlation. I know.
Yeah, we gather more disease data than just black band. I am trained to identify tissue loss diseases, discoloration diseases, a lot of the stuff that we implement in the eyes of the reef, growth anomalies. So I do report on all species, all diseases that I'm able to identify. So, I mean, we can also look at other disease issues that may be ongoing throughout the coral populations and try to get a better picture as to why we're seeing some of the situations that are going on. So it's really worthy. Just the data, like how you said, how Alan and Eric, the amount of data that you can gather over long periods of time is really, really helpful and crucial with understanding the whole ecology of the of those ecosystems. I mean, cause a lot of people depend on these ecosystems in order to survive. The island thrives upon it.
Not the least of which is those of us that eat fish.
So
you mentioned Eyes of the Reef, and I want to be sure that folks know about Eyes of the Reef. We did have a training, it's been a couple of years ago, in Hanalei, and I notice on the website that there's been a couple of reports from Eyes of the Reef volunteers. But if folks are interested in participating in this work, they need to be trained so that their observations matter, so that their information is accurate. And at some point, if folks are interested, let me know at the Hanalei Watershed Hui, and we can organize a training and then expand that volunteer base, because it's very important that people that are out there that have experience and interest in the coral reef health, they have opportunities to participate and help if we can. And Eyes of the Reef is a good way to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a very simple training. It doesn't take a very long time to do the initial training, because most of what we do is we train by showing you images. And once you see some of these images, you can't unsee them. I mean, you're like, oh my gosh, okay, now I know that coral is dying or dead. And you sort of, you can really, really start to understand better once you get in the water, put your face in the water, you'll be able to see, you know, what it is that, you know, the ailments or even the good things, like some of the healthy things that you, you know, you would not expect to see out on the reef.
That's
so,
very cool.
It's a really good training. It is really, really important to understand. It makes it where you can better, and the other thing too is we teach you how to fill out the forms. Sometimes for me,
that can be the hardest part.
Yeah, because they would like to just try to call something in, but it's really hard when someone's telling you a description. It's a little bit easier when they know what the form looks like too, so they know exactly what other information that they need to gather while they're out there.
Right.
Because it's super simple too. It's just observation.
Yeah. So that's at eorhawaii.org.
Yes, that's
eorhawaii.org. For anyone who wants to learn a little bit more about how to provide useful and vital observation reports about some of our reef conditions and coral disease is one part of it. But there's been other issues in the past. We've had, I don't remember what the little fish was that was seen floating around.
Oh, the Toby. Yeah, those were the puffer fish. So, yeah, what we help you guys do is identify the five major threats the coral reef ecosystems, you know, and that's another one too. It's diseased fish, algal blooms, and blooms of invasive species. So it's more than just the reef itself. It's the overall reef health of what we're trying to aid people in understanding how to see that their reef is healthy.
Yeah, and place-based management, you know, citizen science. It's where it's at, because commend you for, you know, working and establishing so many good partnerships with organizations and agencies and university, etc. But when it all comes down to it, this is our place, and it's our kuleana, our responsibility to participate when we can, if we can do it correctly, and this is a good way to do that. I noticed too that you have a student-run blog, Reefology 101. That sounds way cool.
Yeah, it's updates for things that we do. I mean, because we do more than just like get in the water. We do a lot of lab work, and there's a lot of members that work in my lab that all together, this is how this work has gotten done. how we are able to better understand some of the pathology behind the disease, how we're able to better communicate our science. We make sure that with any kind of outreach and education that we do, we put it up there. Just recently, three of our lab members went to New Orleans and presented our work at the American Society for Microbiology.
Wow.
And I did Black Band, and then my other two lab mates, they presented work about Kaneohe Bay disease issues, and then Palmyra atoll disease issues. So we're making sure that we're getting the word out on many levels, and the blog is just one of those levels of just what we're up to.
And you'll be at the
lab overall.
You'll be at this year's Hawaii Conservation Conference, which is in August. And this year, folks, in case you're interested in going, it's always a wonderful event. This year, it's in Hilo. And Hilo Town knows how to host us country style and local style. And Hilo is a fabulous campus that does a lot of amazing work. And this year, the Hawaii Conservation Conference will be in August in Hilo. So check that out on the web if that's something that you think you are interested in, anything that has to do with environmental issues, conservation issues, and lots of cultural connections are always a part of that conference. It's a great conference. Plus, I guess we can't leave out the fact that you're also on Facebook.
Yeah, that's true. We have Eyes of the Reef site on Facebook that you can look at and post pictures. Like I said, it can be of healthy reef ecosystems. It can be of something that you think is disease, or some questions, or even we have a lot of people that they talk to each other and get little dive groups and stuff together. So it's just basically another community-based area where people who are interested in and better understanding what Eyes of the Reef is about, you can go to.
That's very cool. You got to push all the buttons, right? There's not one fix for anything these days.
Yeah, the only place I'm not going to Twitter or anything like that. Sorry, can't go that far. It's too time consuming.
Yeah, you get sucked into that vacuum, that black hole. You may never come back out. And you're a PhD student, so you have a ton of other responsibilities and things to worry about and think about and do. But thank you, Christina. This was fabulous. It's so good to have a current update on where we are. I will go to your Facebook page and make sure that I let folks know when you're back on Kauai and looking at things, in case people wanna talk. Maybe we'll arrange some sort of a little community chat or something, so that we can update people after you've had a chance to look at the reef this year.
Yes, absolutely. That would be great. Like how we did the Hanalei talk last year, that was actually I think it was really helpful. We were able to communicate our science to the public. If we could get more public awareness like that, that would be really, really good.
I agree. Eyes on the Reef is plural. It takes many eyes, and all of our eyes and observations are of value, more valuable if we learn what we're looking at, but all valuable. Thank you, Christina, for taking time away from your work in the lab to call in and give us an update. I really appreciate it.
No worries. Talk to you later. Okay. Have a beautiful day.
You too. Aloha.
Aloha.
Okay, folks. That was really nice of her. She's slammed, I know, in the lab, and it's important that we get the information from the researcher's mouth, right? The next thing I want to talk a little bit about is our Hawaiian monk seal. There was a recent incident of a Hawaiian monk seal death, apparently caused by the impact of a boat propeller. This is a tragic situation, as these seals are extremely endangered, with less than 1,500 individuals left on the planet. Well, accidents do happen. It's a good reminder that many of our no-wake zones can reduce the potential for these incidents to occur. For Hanalei, all of the mooring area where you see the recreational summer boats, motor and sail, and the commercial tour boats moor there as well, that entire area is no-wake. The swim zones on either side of Hanalei Pier are no-wake. In fact, no boat. And the entire Hanalei River is no wake. If your boat is making a wake, you are going too fast. We have a call, and I don't want to change the subject in case it's something that somebody wants to talk about, what we're talking about currently. Maybe not. Okay. I'm going to move on to the Hanalei River. Some of you, if you're on the North Shore, you're going to start to see some big trucks and some rocks and dirt coming across the bridge and going up Ohiki Road. Not to fear, although I do appreciate your observations on this one as well. This is a Hanalei Riverbank Stabilization Project. I'm going to give you a word that I just learned. It's called avulsion. Hanalei River has avulsed. It's not a meander. It's not a river break. It's an avulsion. Rivers can avulse due to the erosion of a new channel that creates a straighter path through the landscape. This can happen during large floods and situations in which the slope of the new channel is significantly greater than that of the old channel. The Hanalei River avulsed in 1996. Many of you remember that. After two large flood events. You remember it was one in November of 95, I think it was. I could be wrong. January, February of 96. Big floods. And they were close together. And what that caused was iniki debris that had fallen in 92 and was sitting and rotting and so forth, that caused that debris upstream to move rapidly downstream. It got snagged on some stuff, and the river evulsed, meaning that it created and carved a new path for itself. The state and Department of Land and Natural Resources has contracted AECOM and Goodfellow Brothers to stabilize the riverbank and install rock and other material to redirect the river water into the main river path. Of personal opinion here, every time man tries to put a river in a different place than the river wants to go, it's not always that successful, but we're going to try again. So the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has required that all the material that you might see in those trucks, the rock and dirt, etc., be certified as clean of any contaminants such as heavy metals. Protections will be installed on Ohiki Road to minimize the impact to the road and the culverts, and traffic on Ohiki Road will be managed to reduce the impacts to residents and the Hanalei Wildlife Refuge users. It's approximately a $2 million project scheduled to be completed by the August rains. They got a little bit of a late start, so we'll see if they can make that happen. There's a caller?
Yeah.
Okay, let's take the call.
Hello.
Aloha.
How's it? How you doing?
I'm good, thank you.
Okay, you were talking about the research that is being done about our coral reefs. Have you heard of a man named Don Heacock?
Oh, yes. I know Don very well.
So he's been doing this for how many years, and we have this person coming along doing it again. Is that an extension of his work, or are you folks ignoring his work?
No. It's an extension of his work. Don works for the Division of Aquatic Resources, DLNR, and Christina Runyon is guided by the University of Hawaii in total coordination with Don and DLNR. They work together.
Are we doing the same thing all over again? Are you throwing at us all this information, all of this stuff, so that we have to look at it again and again, like we're doing with the humpback whale sanctuary, which started first on the west side and then wound up on your side of the island, and then when they came back over here, they've got a resounding no.
Yeah, so...
Is that what this is? Are you folks doing this all over again to keep us busy?
No, I'm not asking you to do anything. So what?
Oh, yes, you folks are.
You choose to be busy.
Look at this.
This is the black band disease that everyone is concerned about.
Yes, I agree with you. And
so that's what this work is about.
Nailed already. And I'm wondering, why are we going through this all over again? Because what are you folks doing? Doing a two-step with us?
The information that Don Heacock has about the current status of the cyanobacterial disease is information that was received from the woman you just heard speaking, Christina Runyon. They work together. It's new information every time. They still have not determined a specific cause.
All we have to do is take a look at where the runoffs come from, which areas are diseased, and you can point straight up to what we're doing, and that is too much fertilizer in places like Princeville. Because they have too much fertilizer out in their areas where they have all that nice green grass, everything else. They're putting in too much fertilizer. When I spoke to Don Heacock, he said almost conclusively that he can't, but he can't nail it down.
That's
the
right.
thing is that we are just repeating this over and over again. You folks, this is just like what they do when they gave us OHA. They gave us another layer of government to go through to get what we want.
Well, we know more stuff now about how to figure out what causes these things. And
we already know what
if you go on that if
know
you
that.
If you go on the website that I referred you to.
I'm alive for 75 years. I've been watching this all along, and I know what's going on.
Okay, well, that's good. Maybe you should participate.
No,
in the...
I'm tired of participating because okay. every time we participate,
okay.
we get shut down.
Okay,
and
thank
I don't
you.
Appreciate that.
Thank you.
Well, just like I'm doing right now.
Yeah, but if you don't want to participate, then there's nothing I can do.
I participate by voting. I get people to come out and vote. I think that us as a group
that's a good idea.
To come out and vote because then we can take back the DLNR from the people who have it right now.
That's
the
a good
DLNR
idea.
DLNR right now, who has it? We don't have it. Corporations have it.
Thank
Alan
you.
Alan Smith on the island of Kauai works deep in hand with Ron Kochi. And they always, hello?
Yes.
They're always doing what they want to do. We don't ever have a hand in it. We get to vote, but we don't get the control over them.
Okay, so I'm gonna take the show back, and I'm gonna take the show back.
Layer of information that you're trying to put on us to keep us busy, so we don't look at.
I'm not trying to keep you busy. I'm trying to give you good information.
Folks are always doing.
Okay, thank you for your call. I appreciate it. Okay, so back to the Monk Seal thing. I really do appreciate his call, and if anyone wants to see the map, it's on the website. And actually, the Princeville site doesn't show that much cyanobacterial disease. And some of the diseased coral are off of Kalalau and Nualolokai, where there are no golf courses and there are no cesspools. So we're still not exactly clear about causes, but we're hoping to learn more each time, new information each time. I think what we'll do is we'll take a bit of a break. I was going to do the riverbank stabilization project, but I'm hoping that you will contact the DLNR or Ardalan Nakru at AECOM if you have questions about that project. Again, the Fish and Wildlife Service is monitoring that very carefully. Can we go to... before we go to music, I want to ask the question, however. And the question of today is, why is the ocean salty?
Down fall. When it hits my cracker, I'll be no alcohol.
So for those of you that just can't stand it, that was a group called the Coastal Cohorts. It's their King Mackerel CD. The song is called Food Chain. I'm waiting for some of you teachers and community folks to use that and do some sort of a little presentation by youth, by kids, and I just think it'd be too much fun. I can see the dance now, frankly, with the chain part. Okay, so I want to make sure that Kauai folks know about the Hanalei River Project. It's going to take all summer. There shouldn't be dirt and rocks going up Ohiki all summer. They should just be up there working at a certain point. But if you have any questions, you can give Ardalan Nikyu at AECOM a call. His number is 808-551-4150. If you get desperate, you can give me a call at the office, 826-1985, and I will redirect you. I want folks, especially in Hanalei, to also know that we understand that waste causes issues for our ocean. We understand that managing our wastewater is a big part of trying to improve coral health and reef health and marine resource health. Whether it's trash left on the beach or wastewater, it all matters. In our organization, the Hanalei Watershed Hui, has received funding to provide financial assistance to homeowners for the replacement of aging cesspools with state-of-the-art septic systems. These systems are called tertiary systems. They have three compartments. They provide much better treatment of waste than cesspools or even currently used septic systems. Properties that are near ditches, streams, wetlands, and other surface waters and are owner-occupied will receive priority for these funds. As soon as we actually receive the funds, we have the commitment, as soon as we receive the funds, we will initiate a query to the community, and we do have maps. We know where the priority properties are. But if you're interested in getting on a list to be considered, please call the Watershed Hui at 826-1985. Funds are available to defray the cost of purchase and installation. So if you're an owner-occupied unit, you will receive 50% of the cost up to $30,000. If you own a vacation rental, some money will also be available for you, but not very much. We're probably only going to do a few of those units, and you will be responsible for 75% of the cost. These will also be prioritized by location. A number of these units receiving this assistance will depend on demand and the willingness of property owners to participate in the program. So, again, give us a call at 826-1985 if you're interested in this. Water quality work, you heard Christina talk a little bit about that. We're also continuing to do testing and analysis of water quality in Hanalei and Makua. Results have been similar to historic values. We're not getting any real surprises here at this point. For Makua, we are looking at variables. We thought that we would see the smoking gun there with bacterial contaminants related to that reef health, and we're not seeing it. The numbers are very, very low. So at this point, we want to acknowledge the Hui Maka'aina Nau Makana and the Ha'ena Makai Watch Program for their help and support in this work, and we're kind of on standby for right now until something might change. I want to let folks know that the state of Hawaii has announced new rules for the protection of the corals and live rock. So live rock is confusing to folks. It's rock from the ocean that has been introduced into a saltwater aquarium. So you take the rock from the ocean and you use it in a closed marine system, mostly by saltwater aquarium hobbyists. And the new rules say stop it. You want to be very, very, very careful when you take anything out of the reef environment these days, because the state also has new coral rules for touching, for breaking, for taking, and for selling. Inadvertent damage or accidents with coral is obviously forgiven if you do it once. If you do it twice, they stop calling it an accident. If you need more information on that, please check with the Department of Land and Natural Resources, Division of Aquatic Resources, at their website for their rules. The rules are right there and easy to access. The next thing I want to talk about is more rules. the County of Kauai is proposing rules change for the commercial boating and surf schools in Hanalei parks. Essentially, the change in the rule is that they would be allowed to operate on Sundays. The changes mostly talk about the restriction that they are now under to conduct business on Sundays. The county is proposing that commercial tour boats and surf schools be able to operate on Sundays out of the Hanalei parks. That's Blackpot and the Pavilion. If you have questions or concerns about these changes, please contact Lenny Raposo, the Director of County Parks and Recreation, at 241-4460. It's important that folks know what the rules are, and they were established so that those of us who want to use the park are not impacted by or conflicted with commercial users. And so the uses of our parks are tightly regulated. These rules are there to protect our public use of our public land and our public place, not for commercial purposes. So the tour boats must launch off of Veke Ramp. If the river mouth is closed or too shallow for them to pass, then they are to walk their people from Veke out to the sand spit at the bay at the river mouth and load them there. So we all remember that driving on the beach is not legal, although so many folks do it. But for these permitted commercial uses, that activity will not be allowed with their permits. They need to be walking them. So if you're concerned about losing our Sunday no commercial use, or if you think it's a great idea, please give Lenny Raposo a call at 241-4460. So I'm going to shift gears a little bit here, because today we also mark the beginning of the hurricane season for Hawaii. And we have a new civil defense manager of the Kauai Civil Defense Agency, and that is Elton Ushiro. He's not new to the county. He's not new to civil defense, but this is a new position for him. He's now the guy in charge. And I asked him to send me some information briefly on hurricane preparedness, and he has been very busy getting ready for this year's hurricane season. It's anticipated the Central Pacific Hurricane Center's 2015 hurricane season outlook indicates the potential for a more active hurricane season versus what we saw in 2014. Being prepared is the single most important thing that residents, visitors, businesses, non-governmental organizations, and government can do prior to any natural disaster. Prepare, plan ahead, stay informed, and don't forget to build a disaster kit. He wants to let us know that the county, state, and federal agencies have been training. They've conducted recent joint exercises. Some of you might know about the Makani Pahili strong wind exercise that is done throughout the state of Hawaii. It was just recently concluded on June 5th, and it consisted of a hazmat full-scale exercise, operational communications exercise, Department of Health contract tracing workshop, collapsed structure full-scale search and rescue exercise. That must have been cool. Community emergency response team. We all know we have CERT integration into various exercise components. Those of you that listen to this radio station from other states, you have CERT in your communities as well. And you may use it for other hazards. But for us here on Kauai, it's mostly about hurricanes. It certainly comes into play for our tsunami warnings as well. And deployment of the Salvation Army's mobile canteen to support the hazmat and search and rescue exercises. So we're very fortunate on Kauai to have a civil defense agency that partners actively with our communities. And for us here on the north shore of Kauai, for Hanalei to Haena, we have developed a disaster resilience plan that is available on the Hanalei Watershed Hui website. It's an excellent reference for preparedness, but also provides a wealth of information on what to do after the storm. The plan will be updated as soon, and your participation is certainly welcome. Again, this is an opportunity for you to participate in your community and help us update this plan. We have a good description of disaster preparedness, disaster response, and resilience, because our plan also looks further out in a long-term view of what we need to have and to do where when disaster strikes. I want to let folks know that today, for today's show, because I knew it was just going to be one call-in guest, and because we had Oceans Day, etc., I sent out a note to some of our agency partners asking them for information or for little blurbs that they wanted the public to know. And Mike Mitchell, the program manager at the Kauai U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Wildlife Complex, sent me a little thing that he wanted me to share with you folks, and it's actually kind of cool. The Kilauea Point National Wildlife Refuge is looking for two interested people for two 60-day emergency hire positions. One is a park ranger and one is a maintenance worker at Kilauea Point. If you want to do something for 60 days, it's not going to be a long-term contract, nor is it going to be a lifetime career, but that's actually kind of cool. Do something for 60 days. Check it out. See if you like it. Please contact Supervisory Park Ranger Jen Wipa at 828-1413 if you're interested. Find out more about that summer opportunity. You have to be at least 18. If you're interested in volunteer opportunities at either Hanalei or Kilauea Point, please talk to Jen also. Same number, 828-1413. And then he wanted to commend one of his staff that most of us that live on the North Shore know well, and he's a dynamite guy who does amazing things and has been here a long time, and is an extraordinary asset, certainly, to Hanalei, and that's Chad Smith. He received a prestigious Recovery Champion Award for the Pacific region of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. His sustained efforts over the past decade in wetland habitat restoration and management have significantly helped to recover the population numbers of our cherished Hawaiian duck, stilt, moorhen, and coot. I remind you folks that the Hawaiian Koloa Maoli, native Hawaiian duck, has less probably than 1,000 critters on the planet. And the moorhen and coot are not much better off. So this is very, very important work. This is an important aspect of our life on the North Shore in Hanalei. And it's important, I think, that we acknowledge those heroes that we have in our community who do this work. It's often unnoticed and not terribly thanked. And so thank you, Chad Smith, for what you do. We appreciate you very much. I want to also point out that the Hanalei Moon and Tide calendar for the month of June talks about some of the Hawaiian names that the fishermen use. Ancient fishermen of long ago were keen observers. They recognized the importance of learning how fish changed as they mature. So for those of you on the continent, you call a jack a jack and a fish a fish. But for us in Hawaii, there might be a name for the baby version of that fish and the midlife version of that fish, and another name for the mature version of that fish. So the following names were given to the various developmental stages of moi. Illustrate the ancient fishermen's understanding of the environment and how to harvest moi sustainably. So moi li'i are the young fingerlings often found in small schools along sandy shoreline. Anybody that's been here visiting or fishes here has seen these little bitty fish along the shoreline. That's the moi li'i. The mana moi have reached reproductive maturity and approximately 10 to 11 inches in fork length. At this stage, they are all males. As they grow larger, they will undergo a gender transformation whereby male reproductive organs begin to be replaced with ovaries. So they're all boys, then they turn to girls. Pala moi are fish at the hermaphroditic stage, having both male and female. They are approximately 11 to 13 inches in fork length from the nose to the middle of the fork. The common name moi refers to the final stage in the fish's development once the gender transformation is complete and the fish is a reproductively capable female, approximately 13 inches fork length and larger. So clearly, if you're catching a moi that's less than 13 inches, you've caught it before it's had a chance to reproduce. Large moi are all females. Releasing very large fish will help ensure a healthy number of productive female moi in your area. This is one of those situations where catching the smaller fish is the worst idea. Catching the middle-sized fish is the not such a hot idea. Catching the bigger fish is a really bad idea. So you want to catch them before they get really big. The bigger females actually have more eggs and healthier eggs. So you want to let the big ones go, catch the 11 to 13, and then leave them alone to reproduce and make more fish. I welcome your comments and ideas for the Hanalei Moon calendar. For next year, we will start production and content for that very soon, and want you to give us your ideas of what it should contain, because, you know, sometimes you guys have great ideas about what we should be saying in that calendar, and we've covered a lot of different territory. Are there specific things that you are concerned about, things that you would like to know more about? Are you interested in more of the land-sea connections? We haven't done a whole lot of that in recent times, but we're happy to pay more attention to that. Maybe as we talk about the coral disease, we'll include a little bit more of the updated information as it comes in. I want to just remind you of the new coral law. Illegal for any person to take, break, or damage any stony coral. Unlawful for any person to damage any stony coral by intentional or negligent activity causing the introduction of sediment, biological contaminants, or pollution into state waters. It's unlawful for any person to sell any stony coral, except that stony coral rubble pieces or fragments imported for the manufacture and sale of coral jewelry or dead stony coral obtained through legal processes can be sold, and also the one for live rock. You might notice that they're talking about water pollution there as well, which is an important new concept for us in Hawaii that we're actually going to make causing sediment, causing bacteria, causing pollutants in the water to create damage is going to be enforceable by the new law. Also remind folks that for the state of Hawaii, we just established in this last legislative session something called an environmental court. And for us here on Kauai, it's Judge Trudy Senda who is in charge of that. And two things are important to note. One is it's a separate system from the civil or criminal proceeding. It is a standalone legal process just for environmental infractions. So much of what our state enforcement people do will be sent to environmental court. And two, there's a really cool opportunity for community service attached to that that would include education and citizen science opportunities and give back for people who have wittingly or unwittingly violated the environmental laws of the state of Hawaii. So the Hanalei Watershed Hui is one of the organizations that participates in that. So does the Waipa Foundation. So does the National Tropical Botanical Gardens. So some of those opportunities on the North Shore, if you find yourself in trouble, is to ask for community service. And these organizations will give you better information, guide you to how to better protect the environment and to be a true conservationist and participant in the solutions rather than in the problems. To wind up today, I have a friend. Her name is Kim Rogers, and she's a writer, and some of you follow her on Facebook. I recommend it. And she put out a blog the other day that I thought was really cool. Well said, simple said, kind of hit the nail on the head. So I'm just going to read a little bit of this blog. Beach finds last week. Plastic toothbrush, plastic baby powder bottle, plastic hagfish trap, plastic coat hanger, and a sundry of unidentifiable bits and chunks of plastic in a rainbow of colors, none of it left behind by beachgoers, but based on its snagged and worn condition, arrived by water. I imagine a fisherman up early, brushing his teeth, when a fish hits his line. He grabs his rod and reel with both hands, and the toothbrush falls overboard. I imagine a typhoon off the Philippines in the Northwest Pacific Ocean, and a half dozen metal containers loaded with baby powder, baby shampoo, baby lotion tumble off a ship. I imagine a local fisherman setting eel traps, and the perforated plastic cone getting loose, floating to shore on the tide. But the coat hanger? What the heck is a coat hanger doing at sea? So this is also the time of year when our Laysan albatross are getting ready to fledge. They have about another month left, and they, before they fly, upchuck a bolus. And the bolus contains the things, some of the things that they've been fed that they can't digest. And so this is the time of year we start to look at those boluses for these kinds of contents. Probably wouldn't find a toothbrush in there, but we do find lots and lots of bits and pieces of plastic. And it's important that we reduce as much as we can, obviously, but also very important that we study these boluses. If anybody really wants to do this work, by the way, I have some down in my office, and they're way cool fun to dig out. They're full of squid beaks, but they're also full of plastic. And so Kim continues to say, the same day I collected the toothbrush, baby powder bottle, coat hanger, and hagfish cone, our first Hawaiian monk seal pup of the season weaned after 6 weeks of nursing by its mother. Now is the time when we worry about monk seal weaners. Without mom exploring more of the coastline, sampling various things to determine what's good eating, now is the time they can get into trouble, get hooked on fishing lines, entangled in fish nets, their muzzles stuck on a hagfish trap. All of this has happened before. So as we celebrate World Oceans Day, a United Nations recognized event to raise awareness of our planet's precious oceans and the need to keep them healthy, a healthy ocean contributes to a healthy planet, helping provide the air we breathe and the food many people eat. So no matter where you live, even in landlocked middle America, your life depends on your world's oceans, our world's oceans. So, aloha, and we'll see you next month on Makai Watch.
Maybe we're ragged and funny, but we'll travel alone, singing a song.